Federal leaders like you know that modernizing IT requires updated technology and a culture shift. Stop reacting to change and start leading transformation. Visit BoozAllen.com/Federal News Radio.
Rare diseases can't hide from our next guest, Dr. Daniel Kastner, a fellow at the National Institutes of Health. He not only cares for patients with unusual maladies, he goes after the root causes of illnesses the way a bloodhound goes after a bone, and he finds effective treatments. For his work, he's a finalist in this year's Service to America Medals program. He spoke with Tom Temin.
Now, let's set the scene here. As a doctor practicing at NIH, your job is to almost provide care of the last resort for things for which no one else can help these people, correct?
That's right. In many cases, we're referred patients from around the country, even around the world, who have, at least currently, undiagnosed conditions where their referring physicians would like us to figure out what's going on with these patients and maybe come up with a new treatment or a cure for them.
And your the citation for the SAMI's nomination cites the issue of someone, a patient who had inflammation or some sort of terrible fevers every day of their life from childhood to adulthood. And that's one of the cases cited. Explain what went on there and what your course of discovery was.
Well, a long time ago, when I first started at the NIH as a rheumatology fellow back in 1985, we were referred a patient from Northern Virginia, a young man of Armenian ancestry, who had had recurrent fevers and arthritis affecting one or sometimes several joints of his body on a regular basis, usually about once a month, starting in infancy and going into his early 20s when we first saw him. He turned out to have a disease, a recognized disease, called familial Mediterranean fever. It's a disorder in which patients have fevers that usually last on the order of 1 to 3 days, accompanied by either very severe abdominal pain caused by inflammation of the lining of the abdominal cavity, or sharp stabbing chest pains because of inflammation of the lining around the lungs, or arthritis, as the patient that we saw had. And these patients can also develop over the course of time a condition called amyloidosis, in which there's a deposition of an inflammatory protein in the kidneys, which leads to kidney failure and sometimes death.
And this can happen to someone every month of their life for their whole life.
Every month of their life for their whole life, and in some cases, even more frequently than once a month in these patients. At the time that we first saw our patient, it was known that familial Mediterranean fever is a genetic disease, and it was known that it's recessively inherited, but no one knew what the gene is that causes this disease, or even what chromosome the gene is on, or what the protein that's made by that gene, encoded by that gene, might do and how it would cause disease. And this was back in the mid-1980s, right at the time when the Human Genome Project was getting underway. And there were other diseases where scientists were trying to figure out the cause of those diseases using a genetic approach. And so I was beguiled by the idea that perhaps for familial Mediterranean fever, I could do something similar. And so at first, I thought that perhaps I could find families with familial Mediterranean fever in the Washington area that might be amenable to study. And in fact, I did, through a connection with the local Armenian church, have a booth at the Armenian Church Bazaar back in, I think it was 1988, seeking families with this disease, which we could then do studies on to try to find the gene. That didn't work out, but fortunately, I developed a connection with a group over in Israel, and I spent the summer of 1989 seeing families with familial Mediterranean fever in Israel, drawing blood from them, and then preparing DNA samples that we could then do these genetic analyses. It took us all together until 1997, so 12 years, a dozen years from the time that I had seen that first patient, before we finally found the gene, which encodes a protein that we call pyrin, after pyrexia, the Greek term for fever. And it turns out that, as we had hoped, the gene that causes this disease was, at the time that we found it, a totally novel gene. It was a gene that hadn't been recognized before, and it encodes a protein that's actually the prototype for some 20 different proteins in the human encoded by the human genome that are involved in the regulation of inflammation and fever. So it really then allowed us to understand something fundamental and new about the control of the human immune response. And actually, through that understanding, we have come up with a new treatment for familial Mediterranean fever. There already had been a treatment called colchicine that was available for that disease. But in patients that don't respond to colchicine or for some reason have problems with tolerance of colchicine, we actually have now developed a different mode of therapy that counters something called interleukin-1, one of the inflammatory mediators that's involved in familial Mediterranean fever. And recently, actually, a drug that counters interleukin-1 was FDA approved treatment of that disease.
You've made a lot of progress. We're speaking with Dr. Daniel Kastner, Scientific Director of the Division of Intramural Research at the NIH, and also a finalist in this year's Service to America Medals program. And something you said earlier, amyloid type of protein, isn't that the one that's associated with Alzheimer's disease? And do you think that your work that you've done to date could have some application, you know, above the shoulders there?
Well, that's an interesting question. Amyloid refers to the deposition of a number of different proteins and tissues where it shouldn't be. So in the case of familial Mediterranean fever, there's an inflammatory protein that gets deposited in the kidneys. In the case of Alzheimer's disease, it's a different protein that gets deposited in the brain. But you are absolutely right that the processes that are involved in these rare genetic diseases oftentimes do have profound implications in terms of the treatment of other diseases. And so, for example, in the case of interleukin-1, that substance that I was mentioning before, the inflammatory mediator, it is involved in the pathogenesis of diseases like familial Mediterranean fever, but there's now mounting evidence that interleukin-1 may play an important role in atherosclerosis and in cancer. And there are now studies underway looking at the role of inhibitors of interleukin-1 in those conditions. So you're absolutely right that by understanding rare diseases, we can begin then to get a foothold in terms of understanding the more common conditions.
And these remedies that are developed based on this knowledge, are these substances that alter the genetic makeup of the person, or do they just mediate the symptoms?
Well, that's a great question. At least the treatments that have been developed so far are treatments that counter the inflammatory process that's going on in these patients. And so these are treatments that do not alter the genetic makeup of the individual, but rather take care of the process that's awry in patients that have these genetic diseases. And for many of these treatments, in fact, the patient needs to continue taking them over time. If they stop taking the treatment, then their symptoms and clinical manifestations come back.
So will someday this move from what I would call the chemical stage to the mechanical stage where we can fix genes, do you think?
Oh, for sure. And in fact, there is very active research going on in that regard. Now, for some of the diseases that we're talking about, they are mediated by white blood cells or by various bone marrow-derived components. These are basically cell types that come from the bone marrow. They're produced in the bone marrow every day. And so in some cases, there are investigations underway of taking bone marrow cells from patients that have diseases like this and then doing some sort of a gene correction procedure in the test tube, and then possibly giving those cells back to the individual, giving them back to the person from whom they came, to correct the problem. So you're absolutely right. This would not have an effect on the offspring of that individual. This is only correcting the genes in the white blood cells of that person.
And what's your next line of inquiry, do you think?
Well, actually, we have several next lines of inquiry. We are a referral center for patients with undiagnosed disorders of inflammation. And so we regularly see patients that are new clinical conundrums for us. And so we have actually five new diseases that we're working on right now that aren't yet ready for prime time, but where we think that we may have the causative gene. We're trying to figure out how mutations in that gene would cause the disease in question and trying to verify that information by possibly using targeted therapies in those patients.